most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Sports Talk begins, and it's time to head once again to the Stanley Fencing Gates Hotline, and we will just ask Vince Ferrara right off the bat. Vince, have you ever seen the rain?
Have I seen the rain?
Yeah. it's a music bed reference as to what we're
talking
from.
Yes, but I wasn't sure if it was a DraftKings reference, you know, because make it rain. So
make it rain, that's right.
I didn't know if you were leading me into that or not. So
no,
yes,
but I do think you and I are the only ones that don't talk about DraftKings on this station. But anyhow, it's always a pleasure to have Vince Ferrara join us, as I mentioned, on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. And Vince's Hour brought to you by Waters Equipment, which I know Vince, you are proud to have on as a sponsor.
Absolutely, they do awesome work. They've been in the area for 48 years. They're heavy duty equipment. Company like skid steer, you know, track machines and mini excavators, tractors, and they do service on virtually any equipment or vehicle imaginable, and just a really reputable and awesome company, and proud to have them on board with us here for the hour on Sports Talk.
Why don't we dive right into the National Football League. Week one concluded last night. And again, for folks that don't know, Vince does such a great job, not just tracking those that completed their eligibility at the University of Tennessee, but anybody who was at the University of Tennessee that then finished their college experience elsewhere, as well as many, as well as all of those that are from the area that went to college elsewhere and are in the league. But Vince, you update that each week at 99.1thesportsanimal.com, don't you?
I do, and coming up later today will be an update on how each of those guys did within their games from week one. So working on that, and we'll post that later today. So 22 active VFLs, unless there's a transaction that I hadn't seen yet today, and that's constantly fluid. And so there's 22 VFLs that are on 53-player rosters, plus four more that are active that were ex-Vols that finished in other schools, and then four others that didn't go to UT, like you mentioned, that are locals. And then each one of those different categories has a number of players that are inactive. Like the Vols have a bunch on the practice squad and a few on injured reserve, like Daryl Taylor of Seattle, just unfortunate that he's not getting a chance to get after it from the jump. For the Seahawks, who still looked pretty good in their win. So, yeah, we'll have another update coming up today. And then I also, on my blog each week, put up a lot of really neat notes that you probably don't get a chance to hear that come directly from the NFL, and just talk about some records that could be set and different matchups, achievements, statistics, really cool layouts. So each week when I put up the schedule, also include some of those great notes from the NFL, and then always remind people about the NFL Report Sunday mornings hosted by one John Wilkerson, and then whatever other scrubs you could come up with each week to join you at a great restaurant in the area.
Well, certainly appreciate that. First blush, what were your takeaways from the Tampa Bay Gronkineers?
Oh, John, I was going to text you to thank you for not referencing that during the entire 2.5-hour show yesterday morning. And then, of course, you drop it on me minutes into the hour. Gosh, just not a fan of it. the whole Tampa Bay thing. And honestly, his performance may have matched how bad that sounds, because it was not what you thought. And this is another reminder. We do it in college football. We do it in the NFL. You see a team move down the field with their first offensive possession, and you think they're going to run the opponent out of the building. You're going to think, how many overreactions did the Bucs get? And people commenting on Brady, on them moving down the field on the Saints and them running that in for the first yard line. I mean, those that were picked them for the Super Bowl or whatever were like, yeah, I told you so, and feeling great about it. And then it wasn't like that the rest of the game. It happens in college football, right? Team moves down the field, scores a touchdown. You think it's going to be a butt race, and then it completely flips the rest of the way. And sometimes that team even gets blown out. It's the way it happens sometimes. But I don't think Mike Evans is healthy in that game. I think it's going to take some time for them. They obviously didn't have he put in extra time on his own to work with some of those receivers. But it's different when you're seeing defenses and teams scheme against you and do things, and maybe your teammates don't react like you think. And obviously he had that bad pick six as well. The interesting thing was Bruce Arians sort of, making comments about him. I don't think that's as big a deal as maybe some of the talking head debate shows made it seem to be today. I think Tom Brady knows exactly what he's getting from Bruce Arians and vice versa. I just think it's going to take some time. Oh, by the way, the New Orleans Saints are a Super Bowl contending quality team. So I didn't think they were going to win that game anyway. I'm not making any grand declarations that they're not going to be good. I think they'll still be very good long term.
Nobody does rope-a-dope like the Saints.
Just to string you along,
just
right, Jimmy?
Let them go down and score, make them think they're really good, and then boom. I did want to ask you about this from Tennessee's perspective. So Jeremy Pruitt says yesterday at the quarterback club that he had 34 out of practice on Saturday, and he was happy because they have had at least 34 players out for every practice for the last 2 weeks. That's an awful lot. How hard is that to build any kind of team chemistry when you have that many players missing every practice?
Well, I definitely think it's hard, Jimmy, but this isn't a normal year where just that in itself in a bubble would be a massive disadvantage. I'm not sure how much of a disadvantage that is compared to other teams in the league right now. Now, Will Muschamp has talked a little bit about players that he has missed or not missed, and the numbers sound less than Tennessee. What we don't know is who those players are. How many of those? South Carolina could have 20 or 30 fewer players that have missed extended period of time due to COVID and quarantine and all that. But the difference in players on the 2-deep or starters may not be that different than what Tennessee's experienced. Also, there's different stages of it. When did those players miss in the totality? And who are those players, I think, is a big key. It still is a disadvantage, especially in areas like quarterback to receiver, where you need that timing. And they didn't have that prior to the start of preseason practice. And then the line of scrimmage, where by now you'd like to have your five settled. Although I don't know that this coaching staff has committed to having to find a five and run with it before. I think we've still had to be determined on the line of scrimmage going into the season, and first in each of the seasons under Jeremy Pruitt to this point. And I think had they known about Cade Mays, there's a chance they would have already had their starting five if everyone, you take all of the players that have missed time and then take that equation now. I think you would have been settled on a five this year. But that's 2020, and I think it's going to be a lot of adjustments. And so it is a disadvantage, but the question is how much of a disadvantage is it to everybody else who I think is having to deal with it to some degree, but maybe hasn't been as open to outlining the extent of what they're dealing with players being out.
Yeah, that's what's hard to determine, is to the degree. If one team's got five guys out and you got 57 out, that's a huge difference, and we don't know that in a lot of places. I wanted to ask you two things about Trey Smith. One, he wasn't very happy that the NCAA has denied so far his teammate Cade Mays immediate eligibility, was he?
He was not, and he's been leading that, Jimmy, on social media and free Cade Mays, and I'm not surprised whatsoever that he took that strong stance, and he's right. It's ridiculous with people getting this year free eligibility to have a guy that coming back to his hometown and has been putting in the work to not grant him that eligibility. So good for him for taking that stance. I don't think he said anything inappropriate. I think he was giving a strong opinion on his team. And if you're going to allow players to speak their mind and express themselves, giving them a forum on a lot of issues, not sure why you would be against him, you know, defending a teammate. And I think that's all he was doing. I don't know. I'm pretty certain it maybe doesn't carry any weight with the NCAA, but good for him to take that stance. And look, Jeremy Pruitt's done it. His head coach has done it. So why should we not want him to express himself? So yeah, he didn't mince any words or go football vanilla speak with that topic at all. He was willing to take a stance, and a lot of people, myself included, think he's right.
Well, I got a kick out of him saying you got people in suits drinking coffee, looking at papers, eating at meeting rooms. And so he was getting on them about that. The other thing was Smith was very high on several people, but Jameer Johnson in particular, saying he's my guy, he's a dog, the type of person you'd want to be in a foxhole with, brings intensity and violence every time, wants to punish people. And he said that they got a whole bunch of offensive linemen that had that same kind of mentality, that they want to put people on their back. They want to be really aggressive. I thought that was also interesting from Trey Smith.
It is, and I think that's one of the offensive line has been one of the better developments, I think, in camp, Jimmy, and maybe the defensive line, and we can get to that later, has been on the other end of the spectrum. But that group with seemingly Wandy Morris missing a significant amount of time of quarantining, Jameer Johnson is the logical guy to step in there, and it sounds like he has been getting a lot of those reps. He's a left side of the line guy anyway, so I'm sure he works closely with Trey Smith all the time. Tennessee used him some as that extra offensive lineman that they can line up in basically a tight end type of position. I would expect more of that this year. I think if he's maintained his mobility to go with the extra 15-ish pounds that he has put on finally to get up to that 300-pound range, then I think you'll be able to see him more pay off that aggressiveness when he does get on the field. And so that's a real nice development and gives you a quality depth at that position should Morris not be ready to go for the start of the season or at any point. And he's a guy, too, that they could slide into that guard spot if Trey Smith needed a series off or God forbid for Tennessee got hurt. I think you got terrific depth on the right side. I mean, if it's not Cade Mays at right guard, I think you got a lot of quality options at that spot. I think Jerome Carvin is as good a candidate as there is at that spot. Kayron Calvert can play either guard or tackle also. And it looks like Darnell Wright has really developed and settled in after he missed spring last year at that right tackle spot. You know, Kennedy is solid at the center. I just think there are a number of really good candidates they have at that guard spot and a number of guys that have game experience starting experience as well on that line. And they haven't even had to force any of their younger guys into the lineup. I don't think they're in a position to have to do that. Jeremy Pruitt mentioned Javonte Spragans, who he caught my eye early in camp, and he spoke highly of him at the quarterback club, as you know, Jimmy. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really encouraging that he said, look, a number of young guys during all this quarantining and guys missing times, for some it's unfortunate, it puts them behind, but then for other guys it presents an opportunity. And Spragans is a kid that has taken advantage of his opportunity and run with it. I thought Trey Smith comparing him to Jayshon Robertson was really interesting. I think there's a comparison there in terms of body type and the having the mindset match a guy like Robertson I think it's a real nice compliment for Spragans. And I think he might be even bigger and stronger than Robertson. So if he's got the mindset and the want to of a kid like that with maybe even more of the physical tools and traits that you're looking for, that's a pretty nice piece that you don't have to rush onto the field, but might be able to contribute for you if you're missing some guys and have to. So that offensive line group, I think, has had a real nice camp. You just, for Tennessee fans' sake, you hope that you can keep that depth from the get-go with Cade Mays at right guard.
Our guest is Vince Ferrara as he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. And Vince's appearance brought to you by Waters Equipment. We'll get a break. More with Vince coming up. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900. That's how you join 99.1, the Sports Animal.
This ain't your mama's radio station, unless you've got a really cool mama. 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson, and it's our good friend and colleague Vince Ferrara joining us for this hour of the program. Vince's appearance brought to you by Waters Equipment as we talk all things when it comes to the world of sports, no doubt the NFL, college football. And Vince, for the college football conversation, folks should tune in tonight for the roundtable.
Yeah, looking forward to that. We'll talk SEC and maybe some big picture on college football and obviously focus a lot on the University of Tennessee. It's a great show we do. Will West always drives the bus and does an awesome job, and then we'll just sample in and keep rotating co-hosts from our station throughout and get different perspectives and predictions. And it's a fun, fast-paced 2 hours. You guys will be a part of it as well. And just fun, and the 2 hours will fly by talking Vols, talking SEC, and it's good to get perspective and talk beyond Tennessee so you can get a feeling for where Tennessee is in the grand scheme of things in the conference. There's a lot of unknowns, obviously, but it will be still fun to see where everybody falls on the rest of the league and where Tennessee lands in the mix in terms of predictions for the season.
And so that'll be tonight from 7 to 9 on 99.1thesportsanimal.com. And Vince, of course, this is the week where we see the schedule change because we have the roundtable tonight. Then tomorrow night, it'll be the starting 11 at 7 o'clock with Will West, his great soccer show, followed by the season debut of Vol Calls. We get to Thursday night after Sports Talk. It'll be Coach to Coach, followed by at 8 o'clock.
It's in the cage, MMA Radio, and we're excited to follow Coach to Coach with Doug Matthews and Coach Dave McGinnis. It's a great show, and our first week on Thursday nights from 8 to 9, there's at the end of the week, there's great ramp-up and excitement for the weekend pay-per-view, so we'll have a lot to look ahead to. We'll have another UFC fighter that will join us on Thursday. Don't want to give it up just yet, but that'll be exciting. We'll announce that later on in the week. But, it'll be another fun, fast-paced show coming up on Thursday, 8 to 9, now on Thursday nights, in the Cage MMA Radio, myself and Tim Loy here on the Sports Channel.
Vince, also, Kravarius Crouch was made available to the media as well. What stood out to you about what he said?
The way he gushed over Henry Toto.
Yeah.
And he just takes a number with that because everybody else does. But coming from him, it means a lot because it seems like those are going to be your inside linebackers to start out in this defense. I mean, even when Derek Ansley talked earlier, a couple of weeks back to us, he mentioned when he was asked about Jeremy Banks that he was behind Crouch at the inside linebacker spot with Henry Toto. So he said he wouldn't be where he is without him. They're brothers. And I think that's great for Henry Toto to take anyone, including Kavaris Crouch, under his wing and help him out, even though they're in the same class. They're about the same age. But, Toto is so mature. He just knows everything. I mean, he was calling the defense early on and knew what was going on. And he's just going to be so important to this defense. And then both Crouch and Henry T have mentioned their bond and connection with Jeremy Banks as well. And how I think both of them have said that's their dog. And, I think those are two good influences for Banks also. That's a positive development also. And interesting, he, like Henry Toto, lost some weight in the offseason to be able to go sideline to sideline more, which is something also that Henry T did. So I wonder if that's something that the coaching staff saw that maybe they wanted to do a better job of, is be able to get sideline to sideline from their inside backer position. The key is, can they continue to have the same strength or more at that lighter weight and still get off blocks and be able to still be effective in the box? Crouch is a massive guy as it is, so you wouldn't anticipate there being much of a drop-off. He talked today also about how he enjoys being in that box and the physicality there. It's his favorite place to be. But you also need to be, in order to be a three-down lineman, and I'm sure he's one that doesn't want to have to either come off the field, or he wants the versatility to be able to rush the passer, either from an inside spot or sliding him outside to one of those outside backer positions, because he can put his hand down. It could have made him a DN, could have put some weight on him and made him a DN if they wanted to. But I think that will give him the ability to stay on the field three downs and give Jeremy Pruitt and Derek Ansley more options on what they want to do with lineups and bringing pressures from different areas. It's interesting that both Crouch and Toto talked about losing weight to be able to get sideline to sideline, and it'll be something to continue to track and follow up on.
You think Crouch will play any on offense in short yardage?
Not unless the running backs can't get it done. I don't think that they'll go out of their way initially to do it, because Crouch is going to be relied upon so much on defense. But if they can't run the ball in short yardage or in goal line, I think Pruitt will send him out there because he knows he can do the job. But I think they would prefer to not to use him there and just have him worry about making adjustments and things like that on defense. He's still a great option, but not if they can get it done. The key is, can they get it done? Because that was an area that I still think needs more improvement for the offense.
Our guest, Vince Ferrara, to join us, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Vince Ferrara's appearance brought to you by Waters Equipment. More with Vince coming up as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Hey, this is VFL Joshua Dobbs, and it's 11 days until it's football time in Tennessee.
This Sports Radio WNML countdown to kickoff is brought to you by Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Find out more at tvacreditunion.com. Go Hawks! Come.
656-9900, *990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Vince, as we heard today, that sometimes, and we talked with it when there was the baseball flap with the Cincinnati Reds, sometimes you have to just assume every mic around you is open. What do you think in terms of the president in Nebraska being heard to talk about, being heard to say that getting ready to announce Huskers and Big Ten football tonight? Do you think that there's something to that? And how far down the road do you think it will be before we see the Big Ten in action?
Yeah, I actually hadn't heard that yet, John. I've been had my head in a bunch of other stuff, including those player interviews. So, yeah, it's the Big Ten. So you could, they could be, they're in the middle of it, and they could be wrong. I mean, how many wrong reports have we heard during all of this from either sources or, you know, ADs or presidents or coaches saying they weren't in the loop and they weren't in communication, and some people said there were votes, and others said there wasn't a vote. Or until it's absolutely a done deal, I'm skeptical about everything coming from them, because they're all over the map. So when they decide to come back and they're practicing and getting ready for a season and release the schedule, then I will buy into it a little bit more that they're on track. And until then, even being caught on a hot mic to me is hearsay, the way with their track record.
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with that approach by any means. Do you think this impacts at all the Big Ten standing? Because pretty much you have the SEC and the Big Ten that kind of set the pace. The Big Ten normally does so from its high horse. I'm just wondering, do you think this changes anything with how there has been such discord, lack of communication, and so many different thoughts that have been shared, especially over these last couple of weeks, that will impact the Big Ten standing in college football at all?
Well, it's an interesting question, John. I think it depends on who you are thinking about it impacting. The media, I think it will. I think some people will continue to use the Big Ten as the punchline and stick to the point that they've botched a lot of things during this process, including how to deal with their own member institutions and lines of communication and things like that. So I don't think that's something that will work out in the Big Ten's favor. It wouldn't surprise me. I think Barrett Salee pointed this out. It wouldn't surprise me if some people that want to be contrarians will say, well, the Big Ten took the right approach. They took the more conservative, make sure first approach before they went all in, like all these other reckless conferences. I'm sure there'll be some that take that stance to be different. In terms of recruiting, I think it could, if the Big Ten comes back and plays, say they get 7 or 8 games in and they are in the mix for the eligibility for the college football playoff, even with a few less games. Ohio State can get away with that, by the way. I don't know about anybody else, but that's why they want to get 7 or 8, because 7 or 8 Ohio State games, when people thought they were one of the best teams in the country, they will get the benefit of the doubt over other teams that have a loss with 10 or 11 games. So that's why they still can be in that mix, simply because of Ohio State. But anyway, I think that in terms of recruiting, if they get to playing in the fall and it works out for them, I don't think it'll have a big impact on a lot of the schools, especially the ones at the top, short-term and recruiting. If they end up not playing this fall and it ends up being in the spring or winter or something like that, then I think, yes, I think that will hurt some of those schools in recruiting, because then you will continue to have the negative recruiting that other conferences can do and will hurt them. I don't know that it makes much of a dent in Ohio State, but I think it can hurt some of the other teams to the bottom in the league, and some of them already aren't recruiting on a super high level. I think it can hurt them if they don't play in the fall. But if they do, yeah, it's bad PR. I don't know that it's a massive hit for them. So the impact, if they play, could still be minimal where it counts, and that's recruiting.
Vince, you mentioned reckless conferences, and I would have to point to the Big 12 for scheduling all those teams from the Sun Belt Conference. I'm not sure what they were thinking.
Yeah, why add to your gauntlet, you know, by adding in the powerhouse known as the Fun Belt? No doubt. That was fun. You know, there's guys that in that conference that have a chip on their shoulder that maybe schools near them didn't recruit them as heavily. And when you bring them together and there's other circumstances that could maybe bring your Power Five opponent down to, down a notch or two, you can take advantage of that. And look, those are well-coached teams. Blake Anderson is a great coach. I've interviewed him a bunch of times. He's done so much in that program, dealt with so much in his personal life as well. And they also, they not only won at Kansas State, they had a number of players missing from their team, and they still won at Kansas State.
They had 10 starters out, 9 or 10 starters out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Coastal Carolina absolutely dominated Kansas at the line of scrimmage. I mean, that was embarrassing. I don't care if it's Kansas or not. To be manhandled like that and be beaten again like they did last year was just embarrassing. So, yeah, I think they're probably hoping or reviewing it and saying, man, we should have just gone – conference only and tried to coast to the finish line. But there's not many that looked good in that conference, even in wins, other than Oklahoma. We haven't seen Oklahoma State yet. Texas scored and Ellinger looked good, but it doesn't look good for them overall, top to bottom, moving forward, unless things change, and they certainly can with so many unknown week-to-week fluid factors with COVID.
Yeah, Texas Tech gave up 567 passing yards to a quarterback from Houston Baptist. How about that?
Right, and a lot of people thought they should have lost that game, and they did not.
Yeah. So. I asked this of Tony Barnhart, and I'm going to throw this one at you as well. Over the last month or so, is there any team in the SEC that you don't feel as good about, either because they lost players, COVID-19, some opted out, anything? Is there anybody that you would look at and maybe it's Georgia losing Jamie Newman, but is there any change in your thought process about any particular team in the SEC that you think might not be as good as you thought?
Yes, LSU. I just saw from SportsCenter that Ed Orgeron said today that most of his team has contracted COVID-19.
Right.
He said not all of our players, but most of our players have caught it. That's alarming. I don't know where they stand right now. Is he talking about at one point or another? What have you done to try to prevent that? Did that not work? Are these guys doing, hanging out in big groups outside the facility and you're just kind of testing your way out of it, or just hoping that they get it and then they're good after that? I mean, I don't know. That's what there's just a ton of questions on that, but that sounds like an inordinate amount. And plus, they've had the opt outs, especially with Jamar Chase. I think that was the biggest one. One of their defensive linemen, my understanding is Neil Farrell, Brody Miller had tweeted yesterday that he had opted out, but now he's back in the facility.
Correct.
And he's opting back in. So that right. does help them a little bit. But, man, Chase is such a big loss, and people were already doubting them a little bit with everything they had lost. I still believed in them as the number two team in that league. But if they're going to have a lot of players missing going into the year, that brings them down a notch to me. How far back, I still have to figure that out. Taking COVID into consideration when doing predictions is you talk about a recipe for being wrong even more than we're wrong. That certainly is. But that they're the first team that comes to mind for me. With Jamie Newman, what's JT Daniels? They still have a lot of talent there. Daniels hadn't been able to practice while Newman was there because he was still recovering from an injury. But those, especially LSU, would be the team that comes to mind the most at this point.
Our guest, Vince Ferrara. We'll get a break. We've got another segment to this hour of Sports Talk. One more segment with Vince coming up. He joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline and his appearance brought to you by Waters Equipment. More with Vince coming up as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
If we were a sports car, we'd be red, fast, and expensive. 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Final segment, hour number two of Sports Talk. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams, our guest, our own Vince Ferrara. Vince's appearance brought to you by Waters Equipment. And Vince, we have a game 7 in the NBA. We also have the start of a new series. First of all, how do you see it playing out between the Clippers and the Nuggets? Vince, you with us?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
There we go.
Okay. I picked the Clippers going into the playoffs to win the NBA championship. So not looking good when you're extended 7 games by the Denver Nuggets, who you had up 3-1. So they seem to have, unfortunately, this on-off switch to where they feel like they can turn it on or off whenever they need to. And, you know, they can lose a game, but who cares, because we have the better roster and then we'll just win the next game. So they're out of those opportunities. I'll take the Clippers. To me, they're the better team, but it doesn't bode well for them, even if they win, to beat the Lakers. Who knows? Maybe they'll take it more seriously in the next round because it's the Lakers. But I'll go with the Clippers tonight. And I like, even though a lot of people have been on Boston having to go to 7 to finish off Toronto was not good for them. I like the Miami Heat. I think they have a lot of ways to win. I like the Heat in a long series, probably 7, to edge out the Celtics.
And your Lightning have an opportunity to close out the Islanders tonight. Do you like them to get that done? And how do you feel they might stack up perhaps against the Stars?
Yeah, I do like them to win. And I actually think that would be as Vince Ferrara-ish of a Stanley Cup Finals as you'll find. I actually covered the Dallas Stars and do like them a lot as well when I lived in Dallas. So that would be fun. And I have a lot of friends that are Stars fans. So obviously my family and, you know, my niece and brother-in-law, and have family and friends that go to Lightning games. Obviously not since COVID, but that follow and love the team. So I think it'd be tremendous. And, I think it'd be very close. I'd probably give the Lightning a little bit of an edge over the Stars, but I can see that being a 7-game series as well. But, man, the goaltending for the Stars especially has been outstanding. And I think that would be an awesome, very entertaining Stanley Cup Finals.
Have you been in communication much with one Tyler Ivins during this series?
No, you suggested it, John, and I very much regret not setting anything up with him in terms of some kind of bet. But yeah, just staying busy. Just, you know, next thing I knew, the Lightning were up in the series, and they blew them out in the first game. So it's a shame I didn't get something out of that, and we'll see if Tampa Bay can finish him off first.
So it was over before you knew it, or you would have done something.
This is true. Yeah, or maybe I guess I kind of thought that maybe you would facilitate it, you know, because we needed to boost what he would give to me. I mean, me giving him mom's cooking, that's heavily one-sided. I just hadn't come up with what he was going to give to me. So I guess I shouldn't have assumed that you were going to referee this. I should have just done it myself.
Well, I mean, to me, that when you start with Mama Ferrara's cooking, it's like, wait a minute, you don't have anything that you can put up of value that comes close to approaching that. So this is a non-starter. It'd be kind of like the Major League Baseball player saying, we want to play 140 games, and ownership saying, we want to play 25.
Yeah, but I do. I can compartmentalize. Like, I have no problem going to Italian restaurants because I'm not comparing it to Mama Ferrara's cooking. If I did that, I couldn't go to eat anywhere. I couldn't even enjoy any fast food or anything. So I have to. I can take that into consideration. So if he wanted to give me, you know, you name Pete's or Gus's or there's so many great restaurants in our area, and hook me up with a gift certificate or card to it, I would be okay with it. We could settle on something like that, but it's too late now.
All right. That's something for next time. But hey, Vince, yeah. We always appreciate it. Thank you so much. Have a great show Thursday night with MMA in the cage, and of course more high school football coming up on Friday.
All right, enjoyed it. Have a great rest of the show. Appreciate you guys.
All right, thank you. Vince Ferrara joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, as his appearance brought to you by Waters Equipment. We've got hour number 3 of Sports Talk coming up, and we have a lot more when it comes to Tennessee football. Up next, we look forward to bringing you comments from one, Trey Smith. That's next on 99.1 The Sports Animal.